Hi, everybody. This is Tyler Florence. Thank you so much for listening. You are about to hear a pre-recorded podcast taped live Friday, June 20th, 2014, from the Aspen Food and Wine Classic. And you're about to hear our demonstration, and the topic of the demonstration was how to build a better burger. Eric Harrelson, our corporate chef, is on stage with me. We talk about some great stories and recipes that we're working on inside the test kitchen, and the whole thing was taped. So you actually get to kind of hear along. If you haven't been to Food and Wine Classic before, you've got to check it out. It's one of my favorite festivals. And as always, thank you, Food and Wine Magazine, for inviting us. So sit back, check it out on how to build a better burger.
So much prep. Hi, everyone. How are you guys? Good. Welcome to the Food and Wine Classic in Aspen. Let's all give Tyler a huge Aspen welcome.
How you guys doing? You guys having a good festival so far? Did you guys go out late last night? I was on the verge. I was one more glass of wine going, yeah! But I did the right thing, because we're here today.
This week in the Test Kitchen is powered by Williams-Sonoma, the premier specialty retailer of gourmet cookware and home furnishings. Their trusted selection of high-quality products is available in their stores across the country and at williamssonoma.com.
So I'm really excited about this. We were here last year, and we really made a kind of a deep connection with the festival, and I'm so glad to be in front of you guys today. How many people are here for the first time? Yep. Oh, Graham, wow. Isn't it amazing, huh? A bunch of virgins. I like it. So be kind to each other. Give each other a hug later. So we're really excited about this. So this is kind of one of those really special events. I shared a car with a couple coming in from the airport last night, and it was their first food and wine festival, period. And, you know, a lot of myself and my colleagues, we all kind of show up at the same stuff. So it's Pebble Beach in New York City and South Beach in Los Angeles. But there's something really special about Aspen. There's something really special about the Classic. You know, it's such a small festival. It's really, really intimate. So it's just us, you know, where, you know, South Beach could be so big. So we're going to get a chance to kind of do something that we've been playing around with, and I'm going to show you a recipe that is just past the R&D stage, but it's really more about an idea. So my 12th cookbook, believe it or not, my 12th cookbook is coming out in November, and it's called Inside the Test Kitchen. And it's a whole new frontier for us as a restaurant company. I have three restaurants in Northern California. We have Wayfair Tavern in San Francisco. Go Wayfair. It's in the former Rubicon space right underneath the Transamerica Tower. If you guys are in San Francisco, we'd love to feed you. Apparently, we haven't fed everybody yet. So if you guys are in San Francisco, we'd love to feed you. And also, we have a steakhouse in downtown Mill Valley called El Paseo. And it's been there since 1947, beautiful restaurant. And then we also have a fast casual place at the airport called Tyler Florence Fresh. And Thomas Keller really likes our joint a lot. He always kind of stops through when he's traveling out. I feel like in a lot of ways I've kind of done it, you know? Like, this is my 18th year on television, right? Started in 1996. And I've written 12 cookbooks. We're also, I'm a winemaker. I've been making wine for almost 10 years now. Our brand, California Crush, it's available at Target. We're a 35,000 case brand. These are ideas that have just been off the top of my head. There's a deep level of passion behind this with my winemaking projects. As a dishwasher when I was 15 years old, working in the nicest restaurant in Greenville, South Carolina, I always said to myself that there was something really special about the chef and what they were doing. And obviously, I went that way. But the sommelier, he was just such a great storyteller. You know, he would bring a bottle of wine, and I was 15, but he let me drink anyway. And he would bring it back, and as a dishwasher, he would really take time to kind of point out, you know, the nuances of the label, the terroir, the vintner, you know, the location where it's from, and the varietals. And I was just so blown away by how much energy you could actually store in one big bottle. Like, that is that winemaker's best intention for that year. You only got one shot at it. Like as a restaurateur, you can make a great dish and it could just suck on so many levels, on so many reasons why. And you can always start over again the next day. As a winemaker, you get one crop, one harvest, one shot, and that's it, right? So we're very, very passionate about our winemaking, and we'll be pouring in the tent a little bit later today. But we've had the ability to really explore a lot of avenues. And I always consider myself lucky to be me for a living every day, because I get a chance to just say, okay, what do you want to do? What tastes good? What feels good? Where do you want to go? And our new thing is about a granular, deep-level exploration inside recipes. So our retail store in downtown Mill Valley, how many people have been to my store in Mill Valley? Have you been there? A couple, two people, fantastic. Four, six people. Popping up like crazy. So we're actually converting the entire space to a lab. And it's going to be called Test Kitchen. And we're turning it into a new multimedia hub that you and I will get to participate in on a daily basis. I'm really excited about this concept. So with current television, you know, sitting in front of a couch and watching what's on, it's not really up to you what's on television. It's kind of like there, whatever it is there. But this is a level of integration that I don't think exists yet, because you and I will be able to talk to each other. So through this application that we're going to develop, and it's going to be on iOS and Android and BlackBerry, where you can actually contact us and we'll cook what you want, right? And we'll film this and then we'll post it. And every Friday there will be, you know, 5, 6, 7, 10 new videos that we upload, right? So this idea about the test kitchen to me is really exciting. We've been going deep with it for almost a year now. We built a small test kitchen, we've outgrown that, and now we're taking our entire retail space and we're building a bigger test kitchen, and we wrote a book about our adventures inside the test kitchen, including what we're going to talk about today, because I think there's so many lessons yet to be learned in cooking. And this is why I've been cooking professionally for 30 years, right? And I had dinner with Michael Bauer. I cooked him dinner. He's the food critic for the San Francisco Chronicle. And he said, Tyler, do you ever get bored with cooking? And I'm like, are you kidding me? This is all I think about. Like 24/7. All I think about is just like how does this go with this, and how can we make this better, and what's the science behind that success story? Can we repeat that success story over and over again? So we're getting pretty good at it, I think, right? So Wayfair Tavern just got its third star in the San Francisco Chronicle. El Paseo had three stars for 2 years now, and I just think we're getting really tight because we do stuff like this. So our new mission is really take recipes that we've been cooking for years and really figure out, okay, why do people like the idea of cooking this, but they never cook it? I'll give you an example, risotto, right? How many people make risotto, right? Okay, so it's a small fraction of people who are actually in this room actually make a risotto that they can be proud of. How many people like risotto, right? Much, much different number, right? So if you take the idea of a risotto and you think through, okay, why is this complicated? Why does this sound complicated? Why does this feel complicated? It's because as chefs, we just sort of follow tradition. You know, there was a recipe that was handed down and handed down and handed down. I was talking to Michael Simon about this, and I was telling him about our discovery, and he was like, stop it, I can't hear you. This is not, I don't want to hear this anymore, right? This is blasphemous. But it's really interesting what you get into it, right? So we decided to take a risotto recipe, and not a complicated fancy risotto, just Parmesan risotto, and time it, right? See how long it takes to make. Large pot, extra virgin olive oil, minced onion, saute the onion, arborio rice, you toast that in the oil, add a splash of white wine, you break the starch coating, and then you start to dump stock into it, right? And you dump and you stir and you dump and you stir and you dump and you stir. So we time this from beginning to end, chopping the onion, the whole thing, right? It takes 42 minutes, right, to make a big pot of risotto. Listen, I get it. That's a lot of time. So after 42 minutes, you're making a risotto, and you like so 3/4 of an hour have gone by, and what do you have? You have a plate of rice, right? I mean, you know how much stuff you can make in 45 minutes? It's insane, right? So we said to ourselves, what's the point of this like dump and stir thing? Could you just take all of the liquid? If you know for a fact, it just seems like untested alchemy of like, okay, I think, but add a little more. But if I know for a fact it's a 3-1 ratio from liquid to rice, why can't I just dump all in one time? Why not? I mean, nobody's looking. Nobody's gonna come get me. So we said, okay, here's our hypothesis, right? We're gonna start over from scratch. We're gonna hit the button one more time, the timer. Now, this recipe has to at least taste as good, has to have all the characteristics of a perfect risotto. You have to be able to count the grains. It has to have that slightly al dente bite to the tooth. And if it's anything less than that, it's a bust, right? So we started from scratch, hit the button, and start over. So it's minced onion, extra virgin olive oil, saute the onion down, boil your rice, splash of white wine, give it a good stir. And then we took a 3-1 ratio with the rice and the liquid, and we just dumped it all in, gave it a big stir, turned it down, and walked away. And just let it go, right? Here's what happens. So the rice, as it simmers, not boiling, but simmering, it self-agitates. So you don't have to stir it, right? The rice has more contact time with all of the stock, so it tastes better, right? Because you're adding it at one time and it's one reduction, we took that recipe 42 minutes, we cut it down to 27 minutes, right? That to me is innovation, right? So this is where we're at. Because I think if we figure out a better way to do that, I'll give you another quick story, then we'll get in the recipe. So our new book coming out in November, it's called Inside the Test Kitchen. It's got 100 on the cover. It's 120 new recipes perfected, right? New recipes perfected. So I've written 20,000 recipes for Food Network for the last like 20 years, and all of them are great and timeless. But I think there's a whole new nano world of cooking that I think chefs should get into. Because there's so many things that we've just done just because of it, right? We've never actually taken the time to go, hey, let's eat a whole cow. And let's just to figure out what the best burger combination possibly is, right? I want to introduce you guys to Eric Harrelson. He's our corporate chef. Come on up, buddy. Eric makes me look good from coast to coast. Hello. So Eric's in the cookbook, and Eric and I, when we're not like sort of traveling around doing this kind of thing, we're actually in the kitchen on a daily basis working on really great brand new recipes, just brand new concepts. We've come up, what are some doozies we've come up with? Self-making macaroni and cheese?
Self-making mac and cheese.
Are you guys ready for this? Self-making macaroni and cheese?
What are some other good ones that we did? Self-making mac and cheese is good.
The Frunion?
Yeah.
So we made it, are you ready for this? So we made it. Are y'all ready for this? Down, 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 bounce, bounce, bounce. So there's two styles of macaroni and cheese, right? There is the macaroni and cheese that you make a bechamel, right? And then you fold in the cheese, and then you cook the elbow macaroni, you fold that in, you bake it, it's got a nice crust on top of it. And then there's college-style macaroni and cheese, which is way more popular, by the way, that a lot of people make, and I don't think they feel particularly good about it because if you look at the back of it, there's not a ton of nutritional value. It's filling and it tastes like cheese and salty, so kids eat it, right? But other than that, there's not a ton of nutritional value in it. So we said, okay, is there an organic version of college-style macaroni and cheese that's better, quicker, and faster, right? So if you think through the process, again, like what is convenient? What is convenient, right? So boiling water takes 14 minutes. Boiling pasta takes another 12 to 14 minutes. So you're a half an hour into this recipe that's basically neon orange goo out of a box. You're 30 minutes into this thing, right? And so to me, I think there's so much more you could possibly do for better recipes. So we invented this recipe called self-making macaroni and cheese, where we took all the ingredients that goes in, completely organic, everything that goes into a macaroni and cheese, and we actually made pasta out of it. Right, so inside the pasta, we use organic dehydrated Parmesan cheese, organic dehydrated milk powder, organic dehydrated Monterey Jack cheese, right?
Yep.
And then, so we made this extruded pasta, we dried it out, right? And then one of my favorite sauces, this is my last story and we'll get in the recipe, because I can talk all day. So then we came up with this recipe. My favorite Italian pasta sauce is called Bertofusso, right? And it's an Italian grandmother sauce where you take the starchy pasta water, right, as the pasta is cooking, and you put it into a pan and you reduce it and you mount it with butter and some salt and pepper and Parmesan cheese, and you've got this really fabulous, very simple sauce. Bertofusso is one of my favorite sauces on the planet, right? Starchy pasta water reduced, mount through a butter and Parmesan cheese. Awesome. So we said, could we make a macaroni and cheese based on that particular sauce style where it's where you don't have to dump anything. So when the pasta comes up to a boil, the dish is done. Can we make a one pot dish out of this, right? So the dehydrated macaroni and cheese, it's a 1-for-1 ratio, right? So you scoop this macaroni and cheese, boom, into a pot, this pasta, and then it's a scoop of same measurement of cold water on top, not hot water, cold water. And you turn it on, and the pasta goes through two steps. It rehydrates, and then after that, it starts to cook. And then when it goes to the second process, it starts to extract all those yummy, delicious flavors, right, from the pasta, the Parmesan cheese, the milk, and it starts to create this really beautiful, gorgeous sauce. And the same way that somebody would crack an egg into a box of, you know, instant brownie mix, I took a big handful of shredded cheese, whatever cheese you want, out of the fridge and folded it in, just kind of mount it right at the very end. And we made a self-making macaroni and cheese that takes 12 minutes to make versus this 30-minute process, right? So anyway, so guys, I think you guys will really love the book. I think the book is just loaded with cool stuff that we can kind of get into. Speaking of this, right? So we.
That's why you bring me up here.
Yeah. Speaking of this, so Eric. So what we're gonna make today, right? Eric and I decided that we're gonna eat an entire cow.
We ate a whole cow. I'm not kidding.
I'm not kidding. We had, how many burgers did we eat that week?
We ate so many burgers.
Was it 2 weeks or 1 week?
I feel like it was 3 days. it was three days, and all we did was eat patties.
Yeah. But what we did is really just kind of think through how many different combinations you could possibly come up with, right? Because, you know, there's a lot of, like, signature blends when it comes to restaurants. Like, restaurants have their, you know, like, their proprietary blend of what their burger is. So we tried every single possible combination, including just straight-up filet mignon, right? You know, taking a ribeye and kind of mixing it with round, taking the chuck and mixing it with the brisket, taking, you know, pulling the oxtail off of the bone itself, grinding that down, and see if you can make a burger out of it. We tried every single possible combination, and what we found out, which was just amazing, and you guys can do this when you go to the grocery store, it's an even part 50-50 split between short rib and chuck, right? So a couple of things you want in a burger. You want really good flavor first and foremost, and then you want fat, right? Because a really good burger has some fat to it, and fat melts down and turns into juiciness. At our restaurants, we prefer a higher fat content burger. So if you like it medium well, we still win. You still win. We win. You're gonna walk away happy. If it had a lesser fat content, you get past medium and you're sort of dehydrating everything anyway, right? So we came up with this burger thing, and then we took it one step further. Is there a new twist on a hamburger bun? So we've actually invented bread. Nancy Silverton said the same thing. She's like, wow, this is really interesting. We invented bread that doesn't use yeast. So think about it. So yeast produces, we'll start making this right now. Yeast produces carbon dioxide, right? So if you have a hamburger bun, or you have a slice of bread, if you have anything, right? Yeast produces carbon dioxide. There's a fermented flavor that comes along with that, and this is not artisanal bread, right? This is a hamburger bun, hot dog bun, lobster roll bun, buttermilk bread, potato bun type of a texture, super soft, right? So with a whipped cream machine and inoculating carbon dioxide, which is the same thing you make soda water with, right? Inoculating carbon dioxide into the bread dough itself, we have produced the final outcome without using yeast at all. We'll make it right now. So we're going to make a potato bun. So we'll get this going, and then we'll talk about the burger.
Perfect.
So what we have here is a small little tight. This is actually half the recipe, right? Mm-hmm.
Right.
So this is 4.5 ounces of bread flour.
Yep.
And 9 ounces of potato starch, right? So we're making a potato bun, right? So we're going to mix our dry ingredients together, and then we have
sugar.
We have baking powder, right? We have baking soda. We have salt. And we have milk powder, right? So the milk powder is gonna give it some richness. The potato is actually gonna give us an enormous amount of flavor and a really interesting chew, right? So that's gonna be the dry ingredients. And then our wet ingredients is 12 ounces of water and an egg. So another thing in our test kitchen that we wanna create, which I think is really kind of interesting, are these open source, because we live in the Bay Area, so this like tech community starts to kind of spill over into the food world, but create these open source concepts that people can do amazing things with. So we did a version of this at the Pebble Beach Food and Wine Festival for a pass hors d'oeuvre. We made a grilled cheese sandwich out of it. and Nancy Silverton from Los Angeles, from Mozza, she said it was one of the most interesting things she's ever seen, right? Because, I mean, think about commercial baking. Think about actually a high-volume bakery that has to kind of wait for the fermentation process of the yeast to actually happen, right? I mean, it's a lot of downtime. If you could actually create machines that inoculate carbon dioxide into the bread itself, how much more efficient could your bakery possibly be? Eric and I were doing research on this, and this is actually not a new concept. Like, sort of independently discovered, we found out that people were doing this in the 1800s, right?
Right. The aerated bread company.
The aerated bread company. So there was a company in England that was doing the same thing in the 1800s, but sort of fell out of favor for some crazy reason. So we're taking this loose bread dough. So that's a bread dough that normally you would add yeast to at this point, right? And then let the yeast start to kind of develop its own air bubbles and structures. So the carbon dioxide folds through the bread and creates bubbles, creates cell structure, and with that you're going to get lightness and airiness, right? So instead of adding yeast to this, what we're going to do now is just take a whipped cream canister and actually just inoculate it with carbon dioxide, because we're going to create the same air bubbles out of it. We're going to griddle these buns. This is the concept what I think is really kind of interesting. So we've got a pancake griddle here, right? Imagine walking into a restaurant, and this is just, these are R&D type concepts we're talking about today, right? But imagine walking to a restaurant and ordering a burger, and the chef starts your burger, and he bakes your bun right in front of you. Wouldn't that be wild? Okay, so we're going to make two of them right here. All right, cool. So, and how many cartridges did that take? Two, right?
This is two. The first one didn't take.
Okay.
We got to let it sit for a second.
Okay, we'll let it rest for a second. So what we have here are two ring molds, right? And we're gonna bake these buns English muffin style, sort of open face on a griddle. And then it has such a beautiful light, airy texture to it. Is it coming out? This is the fun thing about doing these concepts, kind of live in front of people. Sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. Okay, so we've got two ring molds, right? Can you guys see this? Okay, do we have
it's
a
nice
good shot
spray.
On this? Can you get the camera guy in? I want you to get a good shot of this. Come on in.
Don't be shy.
Come on, don't be shy, camera guy. Close. Oh, there you go. Yeah, but I want this angle. All right? Okay, so check this out, guys. So this is bread dough, right? And we're going to fill these up halfway because it'll start to rise, right? And this will bake for probably 10 minutes, which is a little too long for restaurant purposes. So I think we got to figure out how to cut the time down. But I think right now, I think this is a hot R&D concept, right? So we're going to griddle these open face, and they're going to start to bake. So the air bubbles are going to start to create these channels all the way through. And when we cut it open, right, it will look like it'll look like a cool cylindrical hamburger bun, and it bakes right in front of you. Imagine walking to a restaurant and go, I'll have a burger, and the guy bakes your bun. I think it's a cool idea, right? Don't you think? Okay, so our burger grind here, right? So with a burger grind, we actually found out that that the chuck, right, has the absolute best flavor. Do we have any
short rib?
Short rib here?
Yeah.
All right, good. Okay, so take a look at this. So when it comes to making a really good burger, you definitely want a really good fat to lean ratio, right? And I actually prefer grinding whole muscle for a burger because I think it tastes better. Versus if you go to a grocery store and you get sort of this kind of mix-up grind stuff, there's a lack of flavor to it because it's not, like, whole muscle burgers taste better, right? So again, trying to play around with all these different recipes as far as what's what. 50-50 blend. So next time you guys go to the grocery store, right, and you're looking for a really, really good burger, he'll have short rib, right, in the counter. Ask the butcher guy to cut it off the bone and grind it for you twice with a large die, right? And then also take, and then 100, and same ratio with chuck. Grind it twice with a large die. And he can mix it back there or get two different piles, and when you get home, you can kind of mix it yourself. But the flavor of chuck is exceptional for a burger. The fat ratio, right, and the iron concentration in the short rib is absolutely delicious. So you're going to get, like, so I think a short rib burger would probably be too expensive to use in a restaurant. So we actually found a really good medium to kind of cut it with. But the flavor of the short rib 100% is actually really delicious, but it's too fatty, right? Because if you can see the marbling inside the short rib itself, it would be too much. It would be like in our restaurant, we have a 75-25 blend between fat and lean, right? And if we went 100% short rib, it would be too much fat. So a 50-50 blend between short rib and chuck produces the absolute best burger, right? So what we have here is two different grinds of that, right? So we've got, if you guys can see this, come on in, camera guy.
Let me get this guy out of here. We don't need him. Billy's done?
Yeah.
Great.
Our cow chart. You like our craft projects? We brought that up in California. That's good, right? It's good penmanship. All right, so take a look at these two grinds, right? So this is the chuck, right, with the fat, and this is the short rib, and this is the chuck, right? So we have a really, really nice blend, and it's grind with a large die, right? So it starts to fall apart and it starts to crumble. You don't want to overwork the chop meat, right? So if you really start to mash this together, you see some people slapping burgers together and really pressing it to a mold. You really just, it's like when you crush the texture of a burger, it doesn't have that fluffy texture to it, right? So what you want to do is just basically kind of mix it together and then leave it alone, right? You want to create, we got mixing bowls up here?
Yeah.
Right here? Okay, right. So you want to take both our short and our chuck, and you want to mix them together so it's well incorporated. And with this, you actually have a perfect 75-25 fat to lean ratio, right? It's perfect 75-25 fat to lean ratio. And then what we're gonna do is just take the burger itself and then we're gonna create balls out of it, right? And then we're only gonna crush this once. In our restaurants, this is how our prep guys make our hamburgers, right? They're 8 ounces when they go up on the line. And then our grill guy will take that and press it once and flatten it once to go on the grill. And it creates this really beautiful, like nice fluffy texture on the inside, and it kind of crumbles, right? In a really great way, and it stays nice and juicy on the outside. So that to me, is that a good info for you guys?
When you open a bottle of my new wine, California Crush, you can really taste the heart, soul, and passion of California winemaking at its finest. Whether you're watching the sunset on the beach, dinner with friends by a warm fire, or just hanging out on the weekends, you can really feel the warm California sun shine through. California has a crush on you.
How many people are kings of the grill? Is this good content for you guys? Will you guys make a better burger now? So let me show you, thank you very much. Let me show you another good technique. I think grilling is not the way to go. All right? And let me tell you why. Let me tell you why. Because if you take a look at a grill, right? Oh, no, let's take it back. If you take a look at a piece of steak, right? Or chicken breast or anything, and it's got those really pretty hash marks on it. So, you know, the guy in the grill, we'll take the chicken breast or pork chop and mark it this way and then flip it and mark it that way, right? Those are just burn marks, right? They really are. They're just burn marks on top of this whole thing. Where you're gonna get the most concentration and the most amount of flavor is through caramelization, right? Through a high, hot, hard sear. So when you actually take the proteins on the outside of really anything, right? And you melt them, right? It's called the Maillard reaction, where you take the proteins and the amino acids and they melt. And when they melt, they fuse and they make a crust. So that is what delicious meat smells like. That's what delicious meat tastes like. So if you have this gorgeous brown roast coming out, that really hard, beautiful crust on the outside, that's Maillard reaction happening right in front of you. Not to get too inside baseball, you just want color, right? Color equals flavor. If you're searing a pork chop, and it's not golden brown and delicious, but it's sort of like pale and it starts to steam and starts to flip over on itself. My mom used to make these pork chops that had one side, I swear to God. God bless, she's a great cook. No, she is. We're kind of poor grown up, but the cool thing about it, it's like if you take a look at all these things, like, wow, why did that happen to my mom, right, when she was making pork chops? A couple of things. She overcrowded the pan when she put everything in, but then also she wasn't really cooking at high enough heat, right? So she's basically stewing. She wasn't searing. If you're not searing, you're stewing, and that's with anything, vegetables, protein specifically. So you start to extract moisture versus starting to concentrate deep, hard flavor, right? So this is what I want you to do. Next time you're grilling, you got a cast iron pan, right? Take a cast iron pan outside and put it on top of the grill. Close the lid and let that pan get really smoking hot. So you have the expression of grilling outside. We're actually gonna get a better product because you're cooking on a flat surface. It's also easier to flip over, right? This is a way better burger, right? So we got some salt, we got S&P.
Right here.
Thank you, brother. So we got salt and fresh cracked pepper, right? So we're just gonna season the outside of these things, right? So we're not gonna season the inside. And maybe if I'm getting too simple with it, you know, some people like to add different flavor ingredients to the burger itself. Like they'll add, like Lipton soup mix or something, you know? So you know what? Everybody's going, who's got my recipe? Oh, that's my recipe. What? I discovered that. So to me, I'm a purist, right? I want the meat to taste like meat, right? So if you've got a really great burger, I want to taste it, and I want the crust to be the salt and the highlight of the flavor itself, right? So we're just gonna season the outside of this, but we're gonna season the outside really, really well, right? I wanna be able to see the salt and pepper, right? And I wanna see the whole thing. And then we're just gonna crush it once, okay? Just give it one good, simple mash, and then ready for the grill. Just hot yet. We're trying to figure out how this recipe is gonna work at altitude. This might take a while.
No, we're not boiling water.
All right, cool. So we're gonna drop this down and we're gonna let these guys start to sear, all right? We got a little bit of olive oil to the pan, so we got a little bit of fat in the bottom. And when we flip these over, you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. Cool, that's it, right? Ties it goes? We're cooking.
It'll get there.
Yeah, we're doing it. Who says you can't cook at high altitude? All right, so the next thing we're gonna work on is a really good sauce, right? So do you guys like a really good hamburger sauce? What's your favorite? Ketchup, right? Mustard?
We got ketchup.
Mayonnaise, right? I give you that. So what if we made a really good sauce with everything? So we have this really good hamburger sauce we call Goop, right? And it's actually a recipe that my mother-in-law from Wyoming swears by, right? And I actually agree. At this point, I agree, right? So I'm not saying it looks and tastes like Thousand Island dressing. I'm not saying that. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying it's delicious on a hamburger. And we're gonna forget what it looks like. But so this is a roasted garlic aioli. I actually made this earlier, right? So this is heads of garlic split in half in aluminum foil pouch in the oven, 350 degrees, right? We've got some going. Just like that. You can tell the oven's so smoking hot right now.
I have hands of steel.
That oven's so hot. Oh, that oven's so hot. Oh my God, that oven's, wow, that's a hot oven. It's pulverized egg yolks, grapeseed oil, emulsify it, tiny bit of mustard, a little bit of lemon, a little bit of salt. So really got a really good aioli. We got some good Heinz ketchup, right? We got some good Dijon mustard. And then this is where this gets kind of fun. We got capers, all right? We've got parsley, and then we got some pickles, all right? And we got some chives. Now the chives are my twist on it, right? Actually, so are the capers. My mother-in-law just uses pickles, right?
It's just Thousand Island.
It's just Thousand Island, but we're not saying that. That's not what we're saying. Can we get a shot of the hamburger bun starting to climb? It's starting to flip over?
Not yet. Don't rush it. You always rush it.
I do rush it, right?
I'm not kidding. We've made these things a million times, and every time Tyler rushes it.
Wait, is it ready yet?
I have to. No.
All right, cool. So we've got some chopped pickle, right? We've got our caper. We've got our parsley. Okay. Can you guys smell the burger? Does that smell like your burger's come off the grill? Because I always smell with what I, let me tell you what I smell. I always smell just like drippings and charcoal. I don't necessarily smell beef, right? That smells like beef to me. It's great. So garlic aioli, ketchup, a little bit of mustard. All right, we're going to blend this together. And if you guys want a really absolutely delicious and tasty hamburger sauce, I recommend Goop, right? And when everybody says, wow, isn't that just Thousand Island dressing? You're saying, no, it's Goop. It's very different. All right, salt, pepper. All right, then we're going to add some finely minced chive to this. All right, give this a good stir. And I think this is just absolutely delicious. It's kind of one of those like things that, that's awesome. Now here's the deal. I could say this was good all day.
Thank you.
Because it's like the best of everything, right? So if you like ketchup, if you like mustard, like mayonnaise, you want to buy my Goop? Don't fight. Try that. It's delicious, right? Isn't that great?
Like we'd lie.
All right, guys, so we're going for like a medium rare burger, okay? A nice, hot, hard sear, like we said before, right? That's definitely the way to go. Yeah, like this. So this is what you're looking for with a really good burger. Can I get a good close-up shot of this? Do you see what I'm talking about, right? So if you really treat a burger like you're treating a filet mignon, right? So next time you go out to the grill, bring everything, kind of set it up. Actually bring a nice big cast iron pan and set this up. And you'll actually have a way better product that people will talk about. Because the grates vary on different grills, and it's kind of hard to flip over, and the meat presses itself to the grill as it settles, and it's hard to get out and hard to flip over. This is a foolproof way to actually make a way better product, right? Nothing against grills, right? But hang on, it's getting close. This is getting close. So in the television world, she's giving me a 2-minute push, but I'm gonna go over a little bit. Yeah, she's like, whatever. So in the television world, this is where we like to stretch it out a little bit, right? So anybody got any questions about anything that they'd want to get a little breakdown? Sure, second row, go ahead. On this griddle or this griddle? On the pancake griddle, yeah.
400.
400 degrees.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, so, and we're cooking these English muffin style. All right, so 400 degrees. Anybody else? Go ahead. So we went through every possible popular alternative recipe for just about everything. And this is what I like about it, because I've always been, just kind of trying to beat the clock with everything that I do, right? We're either on the road for a really long period of time throughout the year, or we're just launching a restaurant and we got to hit the open date. But everything's kind of up and running and sailing, and we're kind of in this like corporate maintenance mode, which is a really great zen place to be. And now we get a chance to really kind of just dial in great recipes. Freezing burgers, which is sort of a popular, who came up with that? It's in the Heston Blumenthal, right? There's a version of that, right? So he actually freezes the burger, cuts it out, and then sears the outside. So his philosophy on that was keeping the meat as cold as possible, as long as possible, and then grilling it. To me, like, I think that's just so, I just don't know who would do it. That's all I'm saying. So we actually tried a bunch of his recipes, and some of them just don't really make sense. Like, we actually tried his batter for fish and chips that uses a siphon and vodka. And honestly, it tasted like hot vodka over my fish. It followed down to a T, right? And this didn't really make sense. So, this to me feels like a way to kind of streamline the process. So we're not trying to show off as chefs, right? Because I think, and this is sort of the California philosophy too. It's not about putting more stuff in the pan. It's about putting the right stuff in the pan for the right reason and creating a very simple thing that you guys can do at home, right? Because what we do at our restaurants, when you kind of come in and pay $32 for a plate of food, right? Like I've got professionals back there. Like Eric and I are like cops. We have like this cop speak, right? But when it comes to like creating recipes for you guys at home, it's a different conversation, right? So it's about creating like the most simple, most straightforward, most streamlined way possible to create something you can actually make, right? And have really good success with it. So that's kind of what we're talking about. Anybody else? What with the burger? Here's
burger.
Well, so both of these are on high, right? So what you're looking at is actually altitude, which is really interesting, right? If you want to cook it on the grill, you cook it on a grill, but cooking on a grill, and we've all done it a million times, with the success and not so successful dishes, and sometimes they taste burnt on the outside, and it's just, it's not a pleasant, overwhelmingly pleasant atmosphere for a burger. Cooking them on a cast iron grill is going to get that really nice caramelization. You know, when you take the amino acids and protein that melts right there at the right time, at high temperature, it's perfect. What this is just, 9,000 feet in elevation. Hi, first row.
How different would it taste with different types of salt?
Well, I think salt's a really cool thing to kind of jump into. We actually made sea salt. Isn't that great? Look at that, guys. So you want to treat your burgers like you're treating filet mignon, right? And you're going to get a really beautiful outcome. I like it medium rare. Do you guys like it medium rare? I'm going to pull these off, okay? These are great. I'm going to pull these off. So we actually made salt, right? So there's two major kinds of salt. There's sea salt and there's kosher salt. So kosher salt is mined from the earth, right? And then sea salt is dehydrated ocean water. So we took, God, it was so heavy. We took 30 5-gallon buckets and filled them with ocean water from Marin County, California. We had the water tested to make sure there was no chemicals in it. So it was super clean. I have a baby food company, Sprout, and our food. So Eric's actually putting some. We're finishing the top of these right now. So this is going to be the finished sides. We're topping off with sesame seeds and a little bit of salt, right? So our food scientist took, because he's interested in this too. We're geeks together. So he took our ocean water and had it tested thoroughly to make sure there's no chemicals in it. So then we put it into three large wine barrels on top of the roof of El Paseo and let Marin ocean water dehydrate in the Marin sunshine. And it took a long time. I mean, it's way easier to go buy salt. Don't get me wrong. I mean, it took a long time, right? But a year later, because it really took a long time, we had to reposition them in the sun to make sure it was hot. So the slow evaporation, right? Are you ready? Are we going to flip these over? Are you ready for this?
You ready for it?
You want to do it?
Sure, I'll take the fall.
All right, you ready? Okay, boom. All right, cool. So that's the backside of this, right? Okay, so this thing is completely cooked all the way through except for that top layer. So what we're doing with the top bit of this, we're just kind of finishing and really garnishing it with sesame seeds, is creating the top layer and the top look for the hamburger bun. And again, this is taking a little too long for commercial production, but I think if we can fine-tune this, I think this has a lot of play in restaurants. I think if you walk into a restaurant and you order a burger, and the guy bakes your bun right in front of you, I think that's kind of hot, right? I think you guys will probably see something like this in the near future. But it can finish the salt story. So we dehydrated 3 90-gallon wine barrels full of seawater, and we got about 15 pounds of salt, and the salt was beautiful, right? And the salt had these like really gorgeous large flakes, and we had to kind of pick through some of this, twigs and bug wings and whatever. It was outside for a year.
Not uncovered.
Not
uncovered.
But it just had like a screen over top of it, right? So the water was evaporating, but critters would get in. And so we had to fish through that. But it was just really this kind of wonderful process. I think salt sometimes can be gimmicky in a way, right? So to add flavor to salt, right, isn't necessarily going to make your food taste better. Really good, high-quality sea salt is the best salt. Sea salt is the best salt, right? Who's the guy up in Oregon making the really famous, Jacobs?
Oh, Jacobson Salt.
Jacobson Salt, yeah. Right? So this guy that we're talking to, I think this is great. Can you guys see that? You guys see a hamburger bun? Isn't that cool? Let me see your knife. So the tail end of this, right? Kind of cut, separate it from the mold, the top. You get a close-up shot? Are you really taking this? Isn't that cool, guys? So you have this really gorgeous
will do.
Hamburger bun. And I want you to get a really good shot on the cell structure. Can you get a super close up on this? Can you guys see the air bubbles in this? Right? So this is what yeast would actually produce if you added yeast to the product and just let it rise, right? And then bake it off in a normal fashion. So this is what we call our modern hamburger bun, right? And I think this has got some really kind of cool application to it. And you guys can squeeze it. It's not quite done yet, but it's really, really soft in the center. And once we kind of cut this open, is this one good? That was not quite ready yet. These guys just need two more minutes on the side. So I think we're going to have something really kind of cool and great. So so to kind of set this up, all right, since this is like a modern hamburger bun, we're going to use some great flavors here, right? We got some lettuce. We got some tomato.
More lettuce.
Are you guys having a good time? Yeah. Sometimes I because I can talk. I can talk, dude. Have you guys heard our new podcast? You guys know what I'm talking about? So how many people are fans of podcasts? You like those when you're driving from to work? I love it. And sort of an alternative to music all the time because you get to hear people think. So check out our podcast. It's called Inside the Test Kitchen. Eric and I do it every week. And it's in iTunes. It was in the new and noteworthy section last week, so it was probably easy to find. And you'll get a chance to kind of keep up with what we're actually doing this week. It's downloading it right now, Inside the Test Kitchen. It's a great podcast, super fun. We just actually, is it coming up?
Mm-hmm.
A little more color? Awesome, perfect, good deal, good. So what we're gonna do with this guy, is there a bread knife up here?
Sure, there must be, right?
Is there a
whole stack.
There's a ton of knives up here. And one's got to be serrated. Oh, perfect.
Good
enough.
All right,
good. So I want you guys to see the texture of this. So this is a hamburger bun. Can you guys see that? Isn't that wild? Soft texture, right? Isn't that cool? So again, this is a recipe that's still kind of technically in like beta phase, right? But I think this has some really amazing potential to be something great. Do you guys want? I'm gonna pass this around while it's still hot. You guys can smell it. It's also with butter and jam. It's ridiculous.
Well, we made biscuits with this recipe.
We did,
too.
Yeah, we did. There's a lot of variations of this recipe too. You guys want to try this? Just break them in pieces and try it. But feel the texture first. And again, this is like super hot, so it's going to feel a little doughy. It needs to cool off a little bit, but just feel that. So this is a potato bun. Isn't that good? We got some moans in the front row. So this is the fun thing about it. So it's not just about creating something for the sake of it. I think there's some real economic value for someone who owns a commercial bakery to think through, okay, maybe yeast is, you know, very last year, very 2008, you know what I mean? But thinking through commercially inoculating carbon dioxide, where it kind of does the same thing, to produce soft bread. This is not artisanal bread. We've actually baked this off a lot of different directions. You can make a loaf. It's cool, right? You can make a low, nice texture. That's the potato starch. It's a good potato bread, right? So we've created like a lot of really good, interesting variations of what we think are super recipes. So a lot of goop, because everybody likes goop, right? We're gonna take the top part of our bun, all right? A little bit of lettuce, tomato, our sexy burger. You guys into that? Hey-o. All right. Another tomato, right? And then the top part of our bun. And then we've got just some fresh herbs and stuff in your garden. You guys digging that? So this is our new mission, everybody. I think, you know, we've had a lot of fun cooking throughout the years, haven't we? We have, right? I think we're ready for a new adventure. I think we're kind of ready to start working on some new concepts. And it's not necessarily like what's in front of you is not necessarily the complete story. But what's underneath the surface, I think, creates a whole new conversation, a whole new direction of cooking, and a really great place for us all to go and hang out. So guys, make sure you check out. So just pay attention. If you follow us on Twitter or Instagram, you'll see our lab develop because we're in construction with it right now. The app will be available probably at the end of the year, maybe first part of 2015. But this will be a place for us to meet every week, right? You send us feedback, we'll give it back to you. You send us what you want to cook, we'll cook it next week. Does that sound fun? All right? Thank you so much, guys. This is a recipe of Inside the Test Kitchen.